Welcome to Ag Matters, covering the positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit of the Alaska Farmland Trust.
All right, well, good morning and welcome to another edition of Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Mike Emmers of Rosie Creek Farm up in Fairbanks. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Amy.
Yeah, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me.
No problem.
Yeah, so I'm so excited to do this interview. I've been thinking about it for a couple of weeks now, ever since you said yes, you'd come on the radio. We first met probably 12 or 13 years ago when I was new at the Division of Ag and you were a farmer up in Fairbanks, and it's been fun to get to know you and track your journey along the way. And I'm excited to talk about the new face of Rosie Creek Farm. But first, we have to start with you telling us a little bit about yourself. So tell us, Mike, how you got to Alaska and how you got involved in Alaskan agriculture.
See if I can remember that far back. I'm not from Alaska. I'm not even from the West Coast. I grew up in Rhode Island, and what got me up to Alaska, make a long story short, is just the thrill of adventure, like many people.
Yeah.
And I started out working as a park service ranger and then a biological technician. I got really interested in biology and botany in particular, and ecology. I went back to graduate school and got a master's degree in plant ecology, and came back up to Alaska. I got my master's at the University of Washington.
Okay.
Came back up to Alaska. And I'm trying to remember the year. I think it was 1990.
Okay.
And I was a botanist at the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for 7 years. And always had a garden, always interested in gardening, always interested in farming. Had many friends who did it on a small scale, some on a larger scale. And my garden kept getting bigger and bigger. I kept wanting to spend more and more time with it and not out in the field with fish and wildlife. And finally, I quit and started a market garden.
Yeah. So no, you didn't grow up on a farm or have any farmers in your family back in Rhode Island, Mike?
No, I come from a long line of Jewish tailors.
And did you ever envision this future for yourself? Or, you know, I mean, did you have a garden as a kid and you thought, man, I really like this? Or did it not start until post-college?
It probably started post-college.
Okay.
So we always had a big garden, but I never envisioned doing this and owning a farm in Alaska, of all places, to try to do that.
Yeah, no kidding, right? Right. All right, so flash forward to what year? When did Rosie Creek Farm begin?
Well, I quit Fish and Wildlife in 1997, and I got right into it, pretty much. I had some friends in Washington State who had a market market garden, market farm, about 2 to 3 acres in outside of Olympia, Washington. I used to help them when I was living down there, and always kept in touch. They told me that they grew a wide variety of things. They had a CSA, vegetable CSA, but they said, row foot by row foot, they made their most money on cut flowers.
Okay.
So I always really, really enjoyed cut flowers and growing them. And so I thought I'd try that. There was nobody doing it up here, especially at the farmer's market up here in Fairbanks. So I thought I'd give it a try and find that niche for myself.
Yeah. And did it work?
Well, there's a big reason why people weren't doing cut flowers up here. Fairbanks. It wasn't because it wasn't going to work, and we did make it work. We grew a lot of different things, but we couldn't. Fairbanks is just too small of a market to survive on cut flowers alone. I found, and we did very well at it, but we definitely had to diversify into growing vegetables, and we did that in a big way.
Yeah, you did. Paint a picture, Mike, of what the farm looked like back then. How many acres and where's your layout in Fairbanks? Many of our listeners obviously are down here in South Central, but where's the farm and what does it look like? Or did it then, I guess? Let's start back then.
We're about 18 miles outside of town, southwest of Fairbanks. We're right on the Tanana River, and I was really, really fortunate to have gotten 40 acres of land that went right up to the banks of the Tanana River. And it was fairly flat. I was able to clear it fairly easily. It was mostly black spruce. So when we slicked off the vegetation from on top, and it wasn't really difficult to burn all the black spruce after we cleared it, it was really, really rich in organic matter. And we've done our best to preserve that. And so fairly flat, gently sloping land, formerly black spruce, we cleared about 8 acres.
Okay.
And put that inside a moose fence and started growing vegetables.
Yeah. And so 20 years ago when you got started, did you start off right off the bat using organic growing practices, Mike, or was that something that came over time?
No, we started right off the bat growing organically. And I started the farm, we really started clearing in 1998.
Okay.
And it was, you know, there were berm piles everywhere. I think by the time... probably about 4 or 5 years later, we finally got rid of all the burn piles. It was one cleared field. And it was around that time that the National Organic Program came about, and we knew that the law said that you couldn't call yourself organic unless you got certified. So we went ahead, and we were one of the first farms up here to be certified organic.
Yeah.
The 2005.
At some point, you were the farthest north certified organic farm, weren't you?
Yes, we were.
Yeah.
And now Maggie Hallam, who has Cripple Creek Organics, is who actually designed our logo way back when, she's just 4 miles up the road north of me. So I can't claim that anymore.
Darn it. Well, a quick reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Mike Emmers from Rosie Creek Farm, just outside of Fairbanks. Is that correct? Do you claim another town as your location, or being that far out of Fairbanks, are you still in Fairbanks proper?
We're still in Fairbanks.
Okay.
We're in Fairbanks, North Star Borough. I get my mail at the Esther Post Office, so some people think we're in Esther, but really, it's easier to say Fairbanks.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. So 20 years of growing vegetables organically, and I'm sure there was lots of changes and lessons learned on the farm along the way. When you kind of ended vegetable production, what was the farm known for just a couple of years ago as you kind of came to the peak of vegetable production? How did people know of Rosie Creek Farm?
Well, I mean, we have been around for quite a while at farmers markets and doing a very, very large CSA. At first it was cut flowers, and people still call us Rosie Creek Flower Farm.
Okay.
That's what we were known as originally, but we grew more and more vegetables. Having a CSA, you have to grow a real wide diversity of vegetables to make it. And so we grew a lot of different things, and I think that was a problem for us. I think it's a problem anywhere when you're trying to do too many different crops. You can't be really efficient at any one of them.
Sure.
So we stopped the CSA, and probably after 10 years of doing it, and, you know, I kept really, really careful records of how much we grew per row foot on for all through the years, and saw what we were best at, and I whittled it down to around 7 to 10 vegetables that I thought would give us a diversity enough to buffer us, but enough to be efficient. So that's a long way of getting at salad greens.
Yeah.
I think people really, really enjoy their salad greens. Winter squash and pumpkins are a real big thing. Zucchini is really easy to grow and really efficient to harvest. That's what we're growing towards the end of the vegetable era.
Yeah. Onions? Weren't you guys known for your onions?
Onions, yes. But that was less of a money maker for us. Those are too labor intensive. And garlic also.
Right.
I think people did know us for onions and garlic. And I would say that garlic we didn't make much money on, but it brought people in.
Sure.
That was a very exciting thing. Grafted tomatoes. So we had, I think even as much as a couple of years ago, we were grafting 1,000 tomato plants.
Wow.
And having those in the greenhouse. So the beefsteak tomatoes and cherry tomatoes. Cherry tomato baskets made us a lot of money.
Yeah.
And just trying to think of other things. I think salad greens, I think, were our biggest money maker.
Right. So at the peak of your CSA, your community-supported agriculture subscription box or basket program that you had, how many subscribers did you have, Mike, and was it a weekly box program?
Oh, yeah, it was weekly. We went for 15 or 16 weeks. We had, at the peak, we had about 180.
Wow.
Families.
That's a lot of boxes every week and a lot of vegetables.
That's a lot of boxes every week. It was a lot of work.
Yeah.
We just cried hip, hip, hooray when the season was over, because just keeping on that schedule was really, really...
exhausting.
Really, really difficult. We had as many as 40 or 50 boxes that went down to Denali Park every week. But that was too much and we were really pushing it. We were really advertising it. We had decided that farmers markets, where you don't know what you're going to sell week to week, and bringing and taking a lot of stuff home at the end of the day and composting a lot of it, didn't make too much sense. So we really pushed the CSA and got away from farmers market, and the CSA became a burden as well. I think after we went to 180, we stopped advertising and we said, well, let's just see where this settles out at.
Yeah.
And it, without doing any advertising, it went right down to around 80.
Oh, wow.
And we could do 40 deliveries twice a week. Actually, 40 went down to the park still, and we did 40 here in town, and that was manageable.
Okay. And that was still with about 8 acres under cultivation, or had
we cleared 8 acres.
Okay.
But, you know, a lot of that's taken up by, you know, aisles and walkways.
Sure.
Where to drive the tractor and put in the greenhouses. There's still some. So we had about 4 acres in cultivation.
Okay.
Actually 3, because we cover crop an acre every year.
Wow, yeah.
I forget where this question was going, but the CSA, yeah, we settled back down at 80, and then we gradually phased it out.
Yeah. And just, I was also thinking about you mentioning grafting those 1,000 tomato plants. Just for listeners who aren't familiar with that terminology, what does that mean that you were grafting 1,000 tomato plants?
So you can buy a rootstock that's really, really vigorous. It's a tomato rootstock. It doesn't produce any good fruit at all, but you can graft your target tomato onto that rootstock. And what it does is that vigor that the rootstock gives it in mining nutrients and it just adds vigor to the plant. It boosts production. It doubles production.
Wow.
So what we could do on each stem of tomato, we could train 2 liters. If we were grafting 1,000 tomatoes, we essentially had 2,000 plants that were going up, because 2 came from each root.
Right.
And so...
I've heard people say that that's one of, I mean, that if you're going to get serious about tomato production in Alaska and in their high tunnels, that you should be grafting.
Yeah, you should be. You absolutely should be. And not only in Alaska, but everywhere. I mean, okay. They're doing it all over the country.
Yeah.
It actually originated in Japan as a disease resistance. But you can also graft eggplants onto the tomato rootstock and actually make eggplants a viable commercial crop,
huh.
Even up here. So I think one year on a good eggplant year, we harvested well over 1,000 pounds of eggplant.
Wow, very cool. Huh. So where did you learn to do that? Did you have to go outside to learn grafting, or did you just teach yourself? Was it trial and error?
Well, you know, whenever we went on vacation, it drove my wife crazy. I'd have to go visit any farm in the area. So I learned it from a guy named Skip Paul, who owns Stepping Stone Farms in Rhode Island, which is where I come from. And he's a brilliant, brilliant farmer, brilliant marketer. Does farmers markets all over Rhode Island. And he showed me his tomato greenhouse, and I couldn't believe it. And
sure.
So I came home, and I got on YouTube, and I found this grafting video of somebody grafting tomatoes, so I just started doing it. And
kids,
you know,
these days.
I had the razor blade in hand while I was looking at my laptop in the dusty greenhouse and said, yeah, I got to do this, I got to do that. And, you know, the first year we had 90% success.
Wow.
On our graft.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, a quick reminder to folks that this is Ag Matters Radio. Again, I'm your host, Amy Pettit, and joining me on the phone this morning is Mike Emmers from Rosie Creek Farm up in the Fairbanks area. And Mike, we're hitting the time for our last segment already, and we haven't even gotten to the hot topic, which is that Rosie Creek Farm doesn't grow vegetables anymore. What are you guys growing?
Well, we're growing marijuana right now. So we phased out of vegetables. I had long been looking for that magic bullet that would maximize yield per row foot, and we looked at what people were doing with marijuana, and we've long heard about that and thought, wow, that's a lot of money per row foot.
Yeah.
So we got actually the first cultivating permit in the state to grow marijuana back in 2016, and we started growing. And it's been, we're climbing the learning curve on that.
Sure.
We thought that farms all over the state would be wanting to do this, but as it turns out, we're the only one then, we're still the only one.
Really?
That's really doing it outdoors. There are some that are, I shouldn't say that, there's some that are doing it in greenhouses, but actually growing in soil out of doors, we're still the only one, as far as I know, that's doing it.
Wow. And in 2016, Mike, when you put in your first plants, did you intend to fully phase out of vegetables, or were you doing a little bit of both?
No, we didn't intend to phase out of vegetables. We had intended to keep it going. In fact, in 2016, we were still going to farmers markets. And we did it last year, too, in 2017. But the regulations and the difficulty of following the regulations and the scrutiny of the state on what we were doing really made us have to concentrate on, to not have any distractions, let me say. And
yeah.
So we really had to cut out commercial vegetable production. I hope to come back to it one day, but we can't do it now. And so we still have a huge garden. I mean, the crew has had a half an acre garden this year for us, and they were happy with that.
Okay.
We're no longer doing vegetable production.
Well, I have to tell you that I was shocked when you told me that a couple of weeks ago, because you, I mean, in my experience in Alaskan agriculture, you're like, you know, one of the vegetable farmers in the state, and everybody knows Rosie Creek Farm up in Fairbanks, and you're a wealth of knowledge. And to think that you have given up vegetable production to go strictly to marijuana production really surprised me. So let's talk a little bit more about the whys and the hows and what it looks like for you guys. How many acres do you have under cultivation?
Well, we have 1 acre of marijuana cultivation. I think last year we had an acre and a half. We found that was too much to keep track of.
Okay.
So we have an acre in cultivation plus five high tunnels.
Okay.
And by high tunnels, I mean 30 by 96.
Okay, big ones.
And then our tomato greenhouse is in there, and that's a 20 by 96 structure.
Okay.
So it keeps us very busy. And marijuana, I think the crop itself, it's not hard to grow on a basic level, but it's really, really hard to grow to fine tune it to get the results you want.
Yeah.
So it's a new crop for me. I was not a pot grower before this. A lot of pot growers can't get their heads around that we're doing it in a farm setting. Most of it's done indoors in highly regulated environments. I wouldn't even call it. It's almost not growing plants. It's totally foreign to what I'm used to. But nevertheless, doing it the way we're doing it, growing it organically, growing it like I was growing vegetables, we think it's the right thing to do, but it's a really, really steep learning curve, especially here in the far north.
Yeah, I bet. So that's, I guess, there's just a million questions that come to mind, but are you going outside to learn from pot growers in other states, or where, I mean, are you going to YouTube like you did with tomato grafting? Like, how are you figuring this out?
Yes,
or is it just like growing tomatoes? Because, you know, I hear that growing pot is just like growing tomatoes. Is that a fact or fiction, Mike?
Let me think about the analogy. I think they take a lot of care. They both take a lot of babying. So I'd say that's accurate in a broad sense. The difference is in harvest and post-harvest processing, where the harvest and the trimming and the curing and then the and then further trimming after that, it's really difficult to grow good tomatoes, but you pick a tomato off the vine and you put it in a box and you sell it.
And you're done.
The work really begins when you start harvesting the marijuana. That's
okay.
When the work really begins.
Yeah. So walk us through that a little bit. You don't just harvest and put in a box and deliver to the dispensary. That's not your role. You're doing more than that.
Well, yes, I mean, we have to. We could only sell to a dispensary or a product manufacturer. So when we harvest, first of all, everything's tracked. Every plant has a tag on it that's logged into a cloud-based computer system. Anytime we trim a leaf off of a plant to prune it, that has to be weighed to the tenth of a gram.
No way.
Reported. So when we harvest, the plant tag has to be recorded. We have three people out in the field, one to harvest, one to weigh, and one to record.
Oh, my goodness.
And then, we take the plants and we do the first trimming, which is trimming all the big leaves off and cutting the plant down into a manageable size so that it could be hung and dried. And that's done in a dark environment. It has to be, we have fans on it. If it's really cool and moist, we have to put a heater inside. So just backing up that first trimming and bucking up of the plant, all the waste has to be recorded. And then after the plants are dried, we chop those up again and put them into bins, and any waste again has to be recorded. And then we further, it's called bucking. Again, we buck all the buds off of the stems, and those go into another container. Those stems are weighed and recorded, and then all those flowers get trimmed down to basically manicured down to something that looks nice, and all that waste or trim gets recorded too. The tr- trim can go to a product manufacturer, and the finished trim buds can go to the dispensary.
Wow. Sounds like you need someone with a who's excited about data management and data record keeping and Excel charts if you want to get involved in growing pot in Alaska.
Absolutely, and I think anywhere. It's really data management is all it's about. And I tell the crew, you go do your thing. I'm farming the dust today.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Mike, where is your product available, and is it identifiable with an Alaska Grown logo or some other Alaska identification? Is it labeled as Rosie Creek Farm pot, or do people know when they're?
Yeah, it'll be labeled as Rosie Creek Farm. So it's when you see it at a retail store, it will be. There has to be certain information on it. One is the test results on it, what the THC or CBD levels are, if it has any pesticides, herbicides in it, and ours doesn't. It's still organic, even though we can't say it's organic.
Sure.
It's on an organic farm. And then there's some disclaimers about that it's a drug, you shouldn't do this, that, you shouldn't drive, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you'll see that on every single label that goes out. And then the harvest, Rosie Creek Farm, our license number's on it, and the harvest batch is on it. So anything in the store can be tracked back not only to our farm, but to the harvest batch, the date it was harvested on, and the plant tags that went along with that. So it can be tracked back. And then the retail store license has to be on it as well.
Yeah, so much more data and record keeping than probably was required when you were growing certified organic vegetables. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, and you know, it's ironic for vegetables that are eaten raw and put in your mouth. And
yeah,
that almost no scrutiny, other than our organic certification once a year.
Yeah,
but there's almost, and it might change with food safety regulations. But you know, as far as what market farms can do, there's almost no scrutiny.
Yeah.
on that, and there's such high scrutiny on marijuana that's actually going to be burned.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So, Mike, we're quickly going to run out of time, but the one other question, there's, again, a million questions that are running through my mind, but, you know, you've been doing this, you've been involved in farming in Alaska for a long time now, over 20 years. This is a new adventure for you and your family. Put on your magic glasses for a second and fast forward 5 years. Do you think you'll still be growing marijuana in Alaska and expanding that opportunity, or where, what do you think it looks like?
Yeah, I think we will, and I think that the future of the way we're growing it organically and outdoors, using almost nothing for utilities to grow our crop, with energy prices are just going to continue to get higher and higher, and it costs us almost nothing in utilities to grow the way we are. So I think this is the future of marijuana production. I think as the consumers get a little more sophisticated, they're going to seek out an organic product. I think that niche is wide open for us.
Very good. And to your knowledge, is your product available across the state, or is it just particularly up there in the Fairbanks region?
It's available in Fairbanks and Anchorage. We've sold to Sitka and Juneau. In the Kenai, so it's depending on what stores are carrying it, it's available all over the state.
Okay, well, we'll keep an eye out for it, Mike. It's been a pleasure chatting with you about this new venture at Rosie Creek Farm. I appreciate you being a guest on Ag Matters Radio.
Thanks so much, Amy.
Thank you, Mike.
You've been listening to Ag Matters, covering positive agriculture stories from across Alaska with your host, Amy Pettit, of the Alaska Farmland Trust. Ag Matters is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. For more information about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.